Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What's going on, everybody? Hope you are having a good week so far. Podcast time. Vision and Victor Calderon have relaunched Matter Records, Matter Recordings. I am really excited about this. They have relaunched it with their new record, Chemical, which is amazing. I love talking to these guys. I've had both of them separately on the podcast, and now it's great to have them on again together. Victor Calderon is the history of New York, and Vision is the new history of New York, the new kid coming through the block. They're both doing really interesting things in their individual careers and also what they're doing together. So I wanted to get them on, talk about the record label, talk about their thoughts of the scene right now, some controversial thoughts, controversial conversations. I'm going to leave it with you. Without further ado, Avision and Victor Calderon. Oi. Victor Calderon and Mr. Avision. What's cooking, lads?
Yo.
What's up? Hello, world. Hello, Will.
Dude, I love those cabinets behind you. They're so beautiful. It's like the best backdrop ever.
it's a new place that we just purchased. We're about to renovate, so this will probably get repurposed somewhere, maybe in my studio as a vinyl wall. Pretty cool.
They're cool.
Like 1950 filing system, apparently.
My mom would love that so much. She loves, like, I think it's like a female thing. They just love little cabinets and tinctures and stuff like that.
That's how my wife discovered this place. Yeah, she fell in love with all of these like crazy vintage details. Yeah.
Talking of wives, Mr. Avision got married.
Yeah.
I did.
Don't sound too excited. Jesus.
No, of course. Obviously. You know what? It was like 5 months ago. So it's just old news. You know what I mean?
Dude, was it 5 months ago?
Yeah.
Where's this year going?
It was great though. I mean, obviously you both were there, but I don't think I would ever, change a single thing. Like, I thought it was like the perfect day for us. We had a lot of fun.
It really was.
The DJ at the after party was terrible though. I mean, like, he was
awful, man. I mean, what were those classics?
Yeah. No, for real. I mean, you couldn't write a better story. It was just awesome. I loved every minute of it, but
it was my first
reality.
It was my first experience of like a full on American wedding.
Yeah.
Like Italian American wedding.
Yeah.
Because we, I mean, telling me that day. Yeah. I remember you mentioning that.
Yeah. It was.
It's full on.
Full on. Full on isn't even the word. It was like steroids. Yeah. A wedding on steroids.
That's what we do.
When you have your own CO2 cannons at your wedding, you know you're
Yeah, how about my wife almost killed me that night with those CO2 cannons?
She really did.
I remember she sprayed me right in the head. I looked back at Vic and I was like, she's already trying to kill me.
Yeah, man.
Oh, man.
So good. How is everyone?
Good.
Good. Great. Good. Yeah.
How you been, Will?
A lot of exciting stuff happening. Yeah.
Yeah, sick. You boys are starting a record label or started a record label.
Yeah, restarted.
Yeah.
Where did this come from? Let's talk.
I brought in the big guns, you know.
To, don't know why you bring on Roy and Anthony for that. He's definitely not got big guns, but
no big guns. No big guns here.
So tell me, Vic, tell me about Matter. Tell me about kind of how that was started initially and kind of now the current day situation.
It was coming off of the Waveform Recordings imprint at the time, you know, and we were just like releasing all this tech house. And it was towards the end of that where, you know, I was getting more into the darker underground techno. And I just felt like Waveform wasn't the right, you know, place for it to land. And yeah. I wanted to just start a new imprint basically to represent that sound, that darker sound.
Mm.
And then we were also getting music sent to us from other producers that also was techno and just didn't feel right for Waveform. So that's where, you know, the thought of starting a new imprint came up. And yeah, it ran for a bit. And then I felt overwhelmed. I just felt like distracting me from, you know, my other business. And, you know, because I'm sure, you know, running a label is a full-time job. And I just, you know, I needed help and I just couldn't handle it on my own at the time. So I just felt like better to pause it at the moment, you know, regroup, rethink, you know, strategy and come back to it. I knew it was going to be a point where I wanted to relaunch the label, but I just needed time to like, you know, figure out when that was. And then, yeah, coming together with Anthony, just it made sense to bring him on board to help manage and curate, you know, the label.
It is amazing how much time a record label takes, even if you're just like A&R in and you're kind of like, even if you're not doing the back end side of things. I've recently been signing more people to my label, and I'm not really doing anything on it apart from A&R in. And like you like make sure the artworks are cool and make sure everything comes in on time and do all of that. But it's still a lot of work.
It is. And then there's the whole component of, you know, the music, having really good music to put out, you know, consistently, you know, on a monthly basis. You know, it's not easy.
And I think also the interesting thing about nowadays with how the streaming is, and I don't want to kind of start talking shit on streaming 5 minutes into the fucking podcast, but it's like, it used to be very easy to like know if a record is doing well that you release for another artist. Like even like in the vinyl days, you'd be like, okay, we're going to press 300 copies and we're going to sell 300 copies. And then if we sell out really quickly, we're going to repress and we're going to do that. Even then when it moved to Beatport, it was like, okay, we know how many sales we're doing on Beatport, and this is the only place people are buying the records from or listen to the records, and then it gets turned out into DJs, et cetera, et cetera. Now it's like you have to worry about Beatport, you have to worry about Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, blah, blah, blah. And then everything's just spread out. So like what might be doing, like you might sign a smaller artist on the label that doesn't necessarily have a huge amount of pull, but like people are digging the record, but then that's not translating into streams. It's not translating into anything. And then you're like, okay, on a label, on a business side of things, you've spent, let's say for instance, 500 on promo, you've spent 500 on artwork. And then you don't know what how you're making the money, if you're making money. And
it's a lost investment, hands down.
100%.
For the most part.
Yeah.
For the most part, until it's like, until you get that one break, you know, and you have a hit record type of deal.
Yeah.
You know, then you'll make your money back. But it's really for us to tour and do cool things. You know what I mean? Just it's a way of making yourself a little bit different than the next guy, I think, as well.
Yeah, but, it's a bit of a marketing
tool. Yeah, it's a marketing tool at this point. I mean, everyone has a record label now.
Yeah.
Some have 2, 3, 4. You know what I mean? Like some of them just keep opening record labels, you know? Mm. But it's definitely a loss of investment. But I think it's also like you can write your own destiny with your own label as well. Like me and Vic were just, we were going through it. And, you know, it's the first time in my life I don't think I'm nervous about like releasing music ever. You know what I mean? Like I'm not waiting on anybody. Yeah. And if I am, I don't care. I'll just release it on my own label and do what I need to do. At the end of the day, I think, you know, there's a lot of benefits of releasing on someone else's label. But I think, you know, at a certain point, you get your career to a certain level. And then it's like, you know, I could just do this for my own label and write a good record with my own label.
Yeah, I think it's a long-term game, right? And it's like,
yeah.
Once you're, of course, we all know you need the associations to start with, which,
yeah,
whether that's a party from back in the day that you kind of got your association from, or whether it's a record label that you toured with or released music with, like, there comes a point when you have to build your own, and you have to build your own kind of, without sounding weird and... It's building your own legacy, and it's building what you're about as an artist, and kind of what you're about as an A&R and a label head, and kind of what the music you want to push out, not the music that everybody else wants to push out.
Yeah.
It becomes a really important component for your brand. You know, it's just part of your brand. It's under that umbrella, you know, of touring and putting out music. It's just a part of it. It's an essential part of it.
Yeah. When did you boys we're like, okay, we should do this together.
We were taught, like, I want to say, like, maybe last year-ish. Like, maybe, like, this...
ago, just maybe a little bit more than a year. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like, Vic was talking about, like, you know, I think I'm going to bring back the label. And I was like, yeah, you should. And he's like, you know, we're writing all this music. And, you know, we shopped a little bit, but... then we weren't getting an answer on a few things, and we were like, you know what, why are we shopping this?
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, what's the point? Like, we could just relaunch. And I was already a part of Matter when we were doing a lot of releases at that time, and like I had a few EPs on Matter, and you know, I was always trying to send Vic a few guys that I thought could work for the label or anything like that. Any way I could help, I was always going to try and help. And then I remember telling him, I was like, dude, I think, you know, if you're going to relaunch, I was like, would you be down to just do it together? I was like, there's no, we're making a ton of music together. There's no reason why we shouldn't do this. And obviously things panned out the right way. And
here we are.
Now we're here. Yeah. Now we're here.
How does it feel?
It just made sense to have it as an outlet pad for, you know, to represent our sound, you know, and we can control it. You know, we can put all the money we want behind it all the time. You know, we're not waiting on somebody, you know, or their plan or strategy that they have.
Yeah.
It was the right choice.
It's really interesting, isn't it? Because we all talk about this with record labels that we like have to wait. But then again, now we're those people that are making people wait, because we want to sign other artists, and it's like we're just kind of creating the problem again but like it's such a selfish move, but also we have to be in this world. You have to be look after yourselves, and like number one on the label is you guys will take priority over anything. It's the same with my label. Mm-hmm. It's like I don't care what anyone says. It's like, I want to get my label to the point where I don't have to release music on it, and I can do other things, and it can just be a platform where people where it can create careers. But you have to, as you guys being the like forefront of the brand, you have to kind of put that out there, and you have to be the ones promoting it more than, because nobody else is going to do it for you.
Yeah. I mean, it also sets the identity for the label too. 100%. You know, the sound, it just, yeah, I think we need to, you know, keep releasing just to push our sound.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting. The label coming from New York, because I'll be honest, this is just my thoughts and feelings. There's nothing really that's excited me that's came out of New York on a label side of things for a very long time.
Yeah.
And
there's not that many, honestly. There's not a ton of, there's some good underground ones here and there. But there's not really any like forefront labels.
Not as it used to be, you know, with Strictly Rhythm. Yeah, there was a lot happening, you know, in the 90s. But there's not much.
How do you...
To represent, you know, New York and a lot of the younger artists and that are in New York that are looking to get their music out there. Anthony has a good group of guys that are talented, and you know, their music is really not out there. So we would love to get them on board and, you know, just help them help develop them and get their music out there.
Yeah, I think it's really important, because I think New York is obviously has pieced such an amazing part and identity in our scene over the years. And I always feel like over the last like 10 years, there's some great stuff that's happened out of New York, but it's never like lasted, because it's weird. And I'd like it if you like to correct me if you think I'm wrong.
No, you're right.
But it doesn't feel like, it feels like it starts in New York and then like somebody wants to build an apartment block. So it has to fucking like, it has to change. And then, it just doesn't, not everything feels like authentic or organic. And then from New York, for me, what is like, it's cool. It's like the coolest city in America, like hands down.
Yeah.
I know there's some cool parties going on and there are some really cool underground venues and stuff, but it doesn't feel like anything's really pushing through sound wise. And what you guys are creating on the label with the new record, and it just feels so New York to me in its own identity and in its own way.
That's great to hear. That's the intention, right, Ant? I mean, for
yeah,
us.
That's complete, you know, that's the memo that we're trying to set. We're super inspired by New York, and it's not like we try to write music that's New York. You know what I mean? It's just our feel. That's just what it is, you know? And whether someone thinks it sounds like something else, I just think that's where we come from. It's just that in between of like house and techno, and being able to go in and out of, you know, certain melodies and just, you know, trying to, give everyone a little bit of everything on the dance floor rather than just, you know, a one noted type of track, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about that. One noted tracks.
Yes.
What's your thoughts on the whole scene generally? Like, I guess Vic is like, for you as well, from coming from your background, I know we spoke previously on the podcast, if none of you heard, go listen to the old podcast. But we spoke about where you came from and kind of how it was back then.
Right.
What's your thoughts on how the scene is now with regards to the sound?
Right. Yeah. It's in an interesting place at the moment. It's, you know, with the whole social media DJ thing happening, it's a little disheartening seeing that, you know, because I mean, some of it's real and a lot of it is not, where it's just all perception, you know, and some of these artists that are blowing up, you know, with a million followers and, you know, all this attention, and then you just hear their music and it's fucking trash, in my opinion, you know, like, I'm sorry.
Lay it down, Vic. Lay it down.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm not like generalizing, but
no.
It's obvious there is a lot of that, you know?
There's a lot of ghost producers making a lot of money out there. I'll just say that. That's for sure.
Yeah.
You know?
For me, I'm a very different type of DJ.
Yeah.
You know, I come from, you know, like an after hours vibe, dark room, one light, red light on in the corner, you know. I don't want to be seen in the DJ booth. I don't even want people looking at me. You know, it's like, it's a different thing that I come from. So for me, you know, it's just like, when I see that, I'm just like, it's just, I don't connect with it, you know, and I don't understand it. But I can't say that, you know, the audience is not enjoying that, because obviously these people are, you know, building incredible followings and, you know, selling out shows before they even show up. And I guess, you know, it's working for them. But just for me, that's not my lane. That's not my vibe. I've never was just that type of DJ. It's just much more deep rooted for me. And,
style. Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think it's also the art of the DJ as well has changed over the last 10 years. I think for me, I've been questioning myself a lot recently. I don't know if I class myself as a DJ now. And that kind of sounds a bit weird, but it's like, yes, I play records, but I'm playing 90% of my own records, which to me isn't a DJ. Like, to me, I'm just playing a show. Like, for me, a DJ is somebody that goes and crate digs and goes and find the gems and then plays music that no one's ever heard of and can still control a room and take the room into different variations through the night. And then there's also the DJ that you see nowadays that just bangs it out. That is that kind of like, it's kind of turning DJs into rock stars, where it's not about the creation of the night. It's about the DJ that rocks up behind the decks and then smashes it as hard as you possibly can. And
it's exhausting.
And what's your thoughts?
I think there's a certain time and place for everything.
Yeah.
Right. 2 o'clock in the afternoon at a festival or anywhere is just not the right time to bang it out. You know what I mean? Like, that's just not, like, no one wants that.
Mm.
Like, I don't care if you spent $150 on your ticket to go listen to, you know, headbanging techno. I just don't think that's just the right vibe for that time. Right. Like, and I wanted to bring this up too. It's like, even like I'm walking on stages or I'm walking at a show and like the people on before me are just like super fast, super hard, because that's what's trending right now. And it's like, yo, that's not your job.
Yeah.
You know, like that's, and like when I was opening up a room when I was younger, it's like, if I played too hard, I would get nervous that I always played too hard. That's how I was when I was a kid, because like, you never want to be that guy that oversteps and, you know, takes away from the guy after you. Granted, you could rock the room and play a set, but you know, when you're starting to, you know, wind down, you just, you know, level out a little bit for the next guy to come on. And I think that's important. That art is completely gone now. That's completely gone. I'll still have that like respect if I'm playing a festival or playing something where there's a, for instance, like Eric, or even when I play with Vic, you know, I would still like turn it down just a little bit so he could have a moment when he comes on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's just the right thing to do. I think it's like putting your blinker on when you're turning lanes. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's just the right thing to do.
It's really interesting you say that, because I was talking to Ryan, my manager, yesterday, And he always has a go at me for playing like a chill record at the end of my set.
Yeah.
Especially at
a festival. Important.
And he like, he's like, you play 90 minutes and then you play 10 minutes of warm down. Or warm up for the DJ before.
That's the right thing, bro.
And I'm just like, it's also for me is an ending of your set. It's like a time to like,
it is.
This is, I'm done now, guys. Like, this is a moment. Yeah. We can all have this moment together. It can be this like whatever moment you want to create. But then it's also about the person on is going to come on and do something completely different. So let's give them a chance.
Yeah.
Like if I played my biggest record as my last record, it's fucking everybody. Cause
absolutely.
The crowd isn't going to be in a situation where they can go up and the DJ after me is going to be like, I now have to play my biggest record to get the crowd up, and I don't want to play my biggest record as my first record. So it's like, it's fucked. It's fucking weird.
It's setting it up, you know. It's like you said, it's putting an ending, you know, on a story. You know, if you stopped, you know, on like your biggest moment, and then suddenly there's another DJ that appears, the audience is like, wait a minute, you know, like you're done, you know? Yeah. Like, so yeah, it's like literally telling the end of the story, like, and transition it into the next artist.
How do you think, it'd be interesting to think what you guys' thoughts on this, with festivals nowadays, how lineups are curated and how set times are curated?
No one knows how to program anymore, I don't think. I'll be honest. I think they all do a really bad job at programming. Some nail it, but some, it goes from A to Z, and you're like, what the hell is that? Like that doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
You know, like, it only sets up the artist to fail.
Yeah.
In certain ways.
It's been interesting to see these forced back-to-backs or just really random or weird back-to-backs, you know, that don't make sense. You know, you read it on paper and you're like, that is just not going to make sense live at all. And then it doesn't, you know, and it's just like, and you know, like there's no musical connection, you know, and it's I just wonder what that's like, you know, for the audience, like, you know, how a night is not thought out and programmed as it should be, where it all like is fluid and makes sense. I think some promoters are looking more at ticket sales rather than a cohesive lineup that just makes sense, you know, musically.
Yeah. I think also you have that battle with artist egos and manager egos and agent egos and the rise to fame where everybody has to play the headline spot. So is if you and also how crowds are marketed, like crowds, like fans don't go to festivals early, they don't go to clubs early, so a lot of the time it's like you're given a set time and you want to play in front of people. Like, but if you're given the first three opening slots at a festival, sometimes you're not playing to anyone. And then you're like, well, what's the fucking point? Like, you might as well just not
it's
even
just
open.
The billing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's for the billing.
And so maybe it's a mixture of everything of like, how do you curate a lineup? Like I like it in the UK where a lot of like big venues now, like Warehouse Project, I know Printworks did it, I know I think Beams do it as well, where you have to be in by a certain time, and if you don't get in by like 11 p.m or whatever that time is, you're not getting in.
And it's a great concept I think
that way you give every artist a platform.
A chance, you do. You give them a chance to win a little bit.
And I guess also as a promoter, you're actually getting your money's worth then, because you're not just booking a bunch of people for no reason where you could just put local residents on and pay them $200 and Bob's your uncle.
Yeah. It also helps with it helps with like your front end. You know what I mean? Like, you know, by a certain time, people are going to stop coming. So like, let's say you cut the deadline at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
You know, at least the front of the house, you can let go by 3 o'clock. And now you just saved yourself on payroll a little bit too.
Mm.
You know,
I guess also drinks wise as well, like the bar, you know, people are going to be buying bar from 11
yeah.
PM.
Keeps them there a little bit longer. Yeah.
That's the thing that I really struggle with in America is the timings, is like, especially the headline slots. If you're doing like a headline tour, you play, yeah, let's say for instance you play 12 till 2, like,
yeah,
people start leaving at 1:45 because they've closed the bar, and you're like, yeah, guys, you've paid to see me play, and like by the end of it, not everyone's there. Maybe that's my fault because I'm a shit DJ and everyone wants to leave.
Oh,
no,
but-
Never, I never understood it, you know, and specifically on the West Coast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly what you just said happens. Like, the bar closes and it's like the night is over.
Yeah.
Like, wait a minute. Where the fucking after hours culture here? Yeah. Like, we carry on. You don't need the fucking bar, you know, like let's get into the fucking music now.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just never, like, specifically on the West Coast, I've experienced that where the bar closes, the night is over. I'm like,
yeah.
It's very strange. It's really strange. And then you also have these like warehouses that are just banging out like 150 BPM techno. It's not even techno. It's not even techno. Like,
you know,
I'm sorry. It's like trance, hardcore. It's everything in between, but they like to brand it techno. What is it with, I want to get your guys' opinions on this whole fashionable techno at this moment in time. Oh. And
and that said it.
And just it's so strange to me because I guess like, yeah, it's weird. I wouldn't even class myself as a techno artist, and
no. Not anymore.
Yeah. And
I'm not.
And I think, and I don't want to be to a certain extent because it's really interesting because I had it this weekend, and this isn't going to come out on this weekend, so nobody will know, but I played a show and the artist before me like started playing pretty hard and was like, I just want to play some techno just so it comes on. And I'm like, you do realize I don't play this techno. Like, I don't play 135 techno. Like,
yeah,
I play like 128 max. Like, so now I have to play at 130 and it's not going to sound right. But what's your thoughts on all of this like hard TikTok techno?
TikTok, that's a good one. I like the TikTok techno thing. That's what it should be called.
It's interesting because I've had a couple of experience recently coming on after some pretty popular DJs that play that stuff. And I just had to come, you know, I was standing there before I went on and just like watching, you know, and like the people are not even dancing.
Yeah.
For one, it's too fucking fast to dance to. They're just like, you know, they're shaking their heads. I mean, but in a way they were enjoying it and responding. But I just, you know, I was saying to myself, okay, there's no way I'm even going to try to follow this, you know? Mm. So it's best to just like stop and reset the room, you know, just I'm going to start over regardless. People that walk away and that are not there for me are going to leave and, you know, whatever, you know, I'm just going to restart the room. Mm. I'm not a fan of it. It's just, it's not something, there's nothing in it that I connect to, you know, musically. It is just, it has just no soul. It's just missing everything. It's just in my This is my opinion, you know, of it,
And what's the deal with like all the like really bad like remixes going on? Like I heard like so many, like I just heard on, I was on scrolling and I heard another remix of Pump Up the Jam. I'm like, yo, it why do that? Like there's so many records to pull from.
Yeah, it's obviously a trend.
It's also a business move. Like I think it's really interesting, especially like is Vic for you where you used to remix the big pop guys?
Yeah.
I think it's kind of coming back to a certain side of that, but in a very different way on a bootleg culture where it's not, because the music is not music. This is me sounding like a massive dick talking about a whole genre, but because the music isn't musical, and because it's the same in the whole like tech house as well, in the generic tech house. It's because the music is not musical, there's nothing really creative behind it. There's no melody, there's no interesting bass lines, the drum patterns are not interesting. This is my opinion and my theory behind it, is that they have to find a sample that everybody knows to then make that record interesting. And whether that's a fucking Celine Dion sample, or whether that's Pump Up the Jam, or whether that's Kylie Minogue, or whether that's fucking Britney Spears, everybody that's going to raves now knows these records. And don't get me wrong, I've done it, but it's doing it in a different, in a tasteful way, and it's doing it in a in a way that is not tasteful at all.
I'll be honest, I think the reason why it's done so much is just because the game of production has gotten so much easier for anyone to just put anything over anything, right? Like in the 90s, if you couldn't play keys or you know, write your own bass line, you would hire a musician to write those parts. And whether you had something in your head or they freestyled it, you paid someone to do that, and they would get credits on those records, obviously, right?
Yeah.
But now you could literally download MIDI packs or anything that's just, you know, accessible for these people. So you don't really need to know exactly what you're doing.
Mm.
But if you have a good idea, you could probably make it work. And that's why I feel like the genre has kind of gone to shit a little bit, is just because you have so many more producers that, you know, didn't do this for 10 to 12 years before they actually surfaced, and now the music is dumbed down a little bit, and that's why you're getting remixes that say My Milkshake Brings All the Boys to the Yard. That's why you're getting that.
And your milkshake does bring all the boys to the yard,
damn straight. but that's you know, that's the truth. It's, you know, how hard
the thought process of just like trying to pick out this like campy, cheesy vocal for reaction, you know, like it's.
Yeah. Well, you got to think now too, the kids that are 21 to 25 that are going out grew up with some of this stuff, you know, like, so is it us just being like too
old
school? I don't know. I never liked any of those songs anyway. So it's like, I don't want to go to, you know, Club Space and hear Fergie. I don't.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to hear something different. Yeah. Like, why? Like, we did that when we were teenagers at teen clubs. Is that also a problem? Like, there's not many things for teenagers to do anymore. So their first crack at going out is 18. You know, that's also a thing. Is that the reason why music has gotten so corny?
Well, I think also when I had DJ Bone on the podcast, we spoke quite a lot about the culture of electronic music and the culture of techno. And it really resonated with me a lot. And he was like, techno isn't a music genre, it's a culture.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like something for me that we've not necessarily lost, it's just not there so much, is the culture of the underground scene. Maybe it is, maybe we're just a bunch of old dudes that aren't fully got our ears to the floor, but I feel like we would know a little bit more if it was.
No, you're 100% right. Even now I always ask around, like, what's going on in New York, where's like the spot, you know, what, like, other than someone's loft or penthouse, like, what's going on, you know? And I'll get the, you know, every now and then there's a good one.
Yeah.
There's not really much, you know, and I'm like, damn, like the underground scene. That, granted,
we would know about it if it was that.
Yeah, exactly. Really
something happening that was that good. I'm not knocking, you know, the underground stuff that is happening in Brooklyn and pockets of, you know, of the area, but it's not consistent. It's like there isn't a venue that like going back to regularly. It's just there's shit happening, but it's just random. Mm. It's very random. And it's hard to build a culture, you know, with something that is not consistent, you know, that
Well, it's really hard to build a culture on headline culture.
Yeah. Yeah. It became big business, you know, that's what's leading right now, you know, Brooklyn Mirage festivals, you know, all these big business, it's like, you know, these corporations are basically running this shit, you know.
How does that change though? How do you, and I'm not saying that we want to revert back, because I think we're in a really amazing situation where like multiple artists and multiple people can earn very good money from the music industry, where previously it was a lot more of an elitist game, I think. And it was a harder industry to get involved. Now you can, the amazing thing about social media is you can be, look at Mojack, right?
Yeah.
Like Mojack blew up on TikTok and Instagram, and look where he's at now. And whether you like his music or not, you can't take that away from him. He's creating culture around the world. But how do you bring the underground and the culture back to like what it's about?
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I would start like honestly, I think it starts with like the phones being in the club and like actually giving people the experience that a club should be, you know? And like just stripping it back a little bit, I think could help. Like I loved playing Watergate in Berlin because it was just straight up like no phones are allowed. If you get caught with your cell phone out, or, you know, taking a video, you're not allowed in. They used to do that at Output. I think it was a great concept.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing at Stereo as well. It's just, you know, it's the operators that, you know, have to, like, enforce those things or just, like, you know, drive their concept and culture, you know, the way they see it. Not easy. It's not easy for a lot of these guys to survive. You know, I remember talking to Nicholas Matar, you know, about Output.
Can you call on this?
wait, I'm sorry, babe. You guys. No, can you close the door? Sorry. God.
That's hysterical.
Don't get married, people. Don't get married.
Anyway,
love it.
I just look at the example with Stereo, and then I just remember having that conversation with Nicholas Matar, and you know, you look at Output, and you know, you look how well that room was operated, and, you know, and what he built there, and there was a culture there, and you know, people loved that venue, and he was programming the shit out of it. Great lineups, you know, great talent going through. But, you know, on the other end of it, he was struggling, you know, because of Brooklyn Mirage and because of the festival culture, you know, that that has taken over. You know, he's just like, I can't compete. I can't compete. You know, he's like, these same DJs, you know, that are getting these massive fees, you know, playing to play the Mirage are coming here expecting the same thing. He's like, there's no way I can survive in that way. So, I think there's like, there's just like, it's a hard balance, you know, as an operator to keep that going, you know? And I guess that's why nothing is like, nothing lasts, nothing survives. It's like, you know, you get a few years out of it and then it's gone, you know, yeah. Going back to what you were saying earlier, you know, why doesn't anything last, you know?
Yeah. It's really interesting. It's interesting you say that. Maybe it's our fault. Maybe it's the DJ's fault because it's about, we all want to earn more money, right? We all want to put ourselves in a situation that we...
Well, I mean, there's exceptions because I know for myself, there are a lot of rooms that I've been playing at for years that I don't get the fee that I get in other venues. And I play there because I know it's a special room and, you know, I'll compromise on my fee because
it's
rewarding for me, you know, as a DJ. I leave there and I'm like, fuck, that was so good. And I needed that, you know? And I'm not making the money I was making, but you know, I know what those operators are about. And I know that it's not easy for them to operate on, you know, the cover charges that they're getting through the door. And, you know, it's so, it's like, you know, I work with them, you know? So it's not always about the big fee. Definitely not.
No, I think that's important, but I guess in this, when you're talking in a city of New York, for instance, you play Brooklyn Mirage, you get a certain amount of fee. You can only play in New York a certain amount of times a year, right?
Yeah.
And for a lot of artists, New York is a moneymaker, right? So it's like, okay, do you sacrifice a play in New York, which might be like, you play twice a year in New York. So you make big money on one show and then you don't make as big money on another show, which makes sense, right? I think for all three of us would make sense. Like, we want to do something really interesting for the culture. But I think for a lot of artists, it doesn't actually... that it's not about that. It's like, how much money can we fucking make, and is it going to be... is it worth it?
Yeah.
I get that, but you know, some things you should do for the culture, because without the culture you wouldn't be getting those big fees. You know, the culture is what makes you and helps you build and grow. So it's like, I think it's always good to like just give back and just do some cool shit. Like, it doesn't, like for me, like the even last week I did a ground rule pop-up, and like, dude, I didn't care about spending money, making money, or anything. I just wanted to do it where, like, someone can come through, and whether they're a fan or a new artist or they've been a DJ for 30 years, they can come.
Yeah.
And they could have some industry there, and you never know what can happen at a place like that. And that's what I wanted to kind of grow and build with, just, like, doing one here and there. And that, to me, is, like, my way of, like, you know what? I can give back a little bit, or I can just have a good time with people that just want to have fun.
Yeah.
Rather than like focusing on like the amount of shows I'm going to do in New York or what's paying me, you know. I think it's important to build that community a little bit.
Yeah, community is so important in this industry, and I still think people forget about it. Because it is about having a core fan base and a core community that can, that comes to the shows, but also talks about you and talks about you when you're not there, and shares your videos and comments on your stuff, and the people that like can really be part of your career and your sound and everything. I think that's so important. That
even look at that, like Fortet, Skrillex, and Fred Again thing that they did in Times Square. Like, I looked at that and I was like, fuck, they nailed that. Holy shit. Like, I mean, granted, they're three huge artists.
Yeah.
But like, that is what you do when you're at that level.
Yeah.
Like, that's exactly the move you make. You know, like who else could pull off a fucking huge Times Square concert? I don't think they got paid, maybe off of sponsorships, but who cares? They sold out Madison Square Garden. I don't think they were worried about getting paid for that.
Yeah.
You know,
it's interesting, isn't it? Because I was talking to somebody the other day about this and she was like, I'm so glad Skrillex is back. And I was like, why do you think that? And she was like, well, he's doing things. He's like freshening up the scene again. Like she's like, she works for a venue and, or multiple venues. And she's like, I've been asked so many times to now in the last 3 months to do a show in the round or stuff like that. And I'm like,
yeah,
I was like, it's really easy for Skrillex to do what the fuck he wants. But when you're even for us at our level, it's pretty hard to get promoters to change things for us. It's pretty hard to be like, I want to enforce this at my show. I want to do this. I want to do that. And it's
really... Yeah, because you have to be at that stature to be able to pull that off.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be the one to be selling that many tickets where you don't need the promoter. Yeah. Where the promoter knows he needs you in a way, you know?
Yeah.
That's where you win. And that's where you could really take your creativeness and bring that to the forefront as well. You know, you're not relying on anybody. I think that's like when you really succeeded, you know?
Yeah. How do you create that though from a platform where you're not necessarily selling everything out and you're not necessarily the biggest artist in the world or the three biggest artists in the world? How do you do that now?
I think that's just like repetition and like sticking to your ground, holding your ground, you know? I think that's like...
It's also something that when promoters see you're onto something, that, you know, you're building something, you have this following, they see something's happening, you're putting effort into it. I think that's, you know, when you gain that attention, I think that's when they want it, you know, and you know, there are certain guys that'll support that vision and want to bring it in and, you know, help you build it in their venue.
Yeah. I want to go back to this no phones thing. I'm really intrigued with this. And there's an argument against it and for it. Let's say, for instance, Tale of Us. Okay, what they're doing. Whether you like the music or not, it's a different situation, but it's purely based on visuals. That whole show is purely based on a visual aspect. Same with Eric Prydz with whatever his epic, whatever he's doing. They need people with phones.
Yeah, that's what made them
big.
Them, yeah.
You see, and that also takes it away from, for me, and this isn't me talking shit on them, because I actually really respect what they're doing, and I really like my favorite, like Chemical Brothers are my favorite, hands down, yeah, number one artist in the world, and their live show is very visual based. It's very visual, but it's different than a DJ. They're not DJing, they're actually doing a live performance, which kind of is a bit different. But also an argument against to us, we want people filming us and putting us on their social media to promote us, for us to then become bigger artists and people be like, oh, what was that? Oh, who was that artist? Blah, 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 blah. However, there is a romance in everyone just being in the moment.
I think there's a true, like, want for people to know the unknown.
Yeah.
And what would make them go to something is to figure it out for themselves.
Mm.
And I think that's what a club is really about. Like, in the 90s, early 2000s, you didn't know what you were getting that night, but you still went.
Yeah.
Because Victor had a residency, or Danny Tenaglia was playing here, and you knew that they were going to bring some sort of level of music, right? or you just wanted to go listen to the record that you heard last week that you can't find.
Yeah.
And I think that level of just like figuring it out for yourself is so needed now, because you can Google anything. You can get AI to write anything for you now. And that experience is missing. You know, that's what's, I feel like, is missing right now. It's like the experience of what a DJ brings to the table rather than the experience of the video wall behind them, or, you know, this sick laser or whatever, you know what I mean, on social media. That's, or how a DJ is dancing like an asshole back there. That's not cool. Yeah. You know what I mean? To me anyway. But I think that level of just that thing of like figuring it out and going to something that, you know, you kind of have to know someone or know something about to get in is needed.
I think it applies more to the underground culture, what we're talking about.
You know,
home thing. I don't think it applies to festivals.
To like festivals. Yeah, no. That can never happen.
Festivals are made to be spectacles. They're made to be outrageous, you know, visual things. And I think the music almost becomes secondary, you know, where, you know.
So
seeing some of these shows where it's just like the visuals are literally what it's about.
Yeah.
You know? So
I think we're all guilty of that too.
It doesn't apply there. You know, it's an underground culture thing where in a room like Stereo, a room like Output, you know, Bergheim, you know, it's like, it's about the music.
Yeah.
It's strictly about the music. You know, and you should not have your phone in your hand, because then you're missing the whole point of being there.
Mm.
You know, it's, you're not there to see some crazy LED screen. You know, you're there to connect to what's coming out of the fucking speakers. That's it.
I love that. Do we start a movement?
And the movement has already started. There are many operators that, you know, you walking up the stairs at Stereo, you guys have both been there. You know, it's fucking printed on the wall. You know, you're here, you know, respect everyone around you. Don't take your phone out. You know, it's like, yeah, it's written there on the wall.
Yeah, but I guess for me, when I say start a movement, yeah, that's probably arrogant for me to say that. But like, I think, do we re-bring that back where we have the power to ask promoters to
make no phones,
to enforce no phones.
It doesn't work anywhere. You know, I can't even say like something like that would work at Space Terrace, you know, because that's a different venue. Yeah. I can't even imagine that, you know, there.
And I think, honestly, I don't even see that many phones like during the, like once that sun hits, you don't see anybody really.
Because they can't see their phones because the amount of narcotics they've taken.
That's very true. That's very true.
But, yeah, but I think there is a level of it where it's like there are places that it would work. And I think it is about connecting back to the music and back to what we're actually, the escapism of life. And a phone for me now isn't about escaping life. It's about being... like a phone connects you to everything in the world. You can be you can be on the dance floor, checking your emails, still working what you're trying to escape from by going to the club, and you're not escaping it. Or you're looking at social media and worrying about how many likes your last post got, or who's watching your stories. And I think there's a level of that where for me, club culture was always to escape reality.
Yeah.
And it's not.
That's what it is for a lot of people.
Completely what it's about. Yep.
Do you think it still is?
Yeah, I do. I still get messages from people that say, like, you have no idea how much I needed that. Like, thank you so much.
Yeah.
So I still think there's some sort of escape for people that really love this and love going to listen to music.
Nah. I agree.
I just think, like, right now where the scene is at, it's just become so redundant and repetitive where everyone is just doing the same thing. So what makes that so exciting?
Yeah, why do you want to go to another show that does the same thing, that plays the same music, that does
If I knew the Yankees were going to lose every single game, or if they were going to win every single game by, you know, 1-0, 2-0 every single time, I wouldn't go to a Yankee game.
Yeah.
You know? That's the only thing that, like, scares me about the industry is this, like, you know, where does it go from here? Where does it level up and what's going to change, you know? But I guess that's just time will tell.
Well, I think it's also, it rots from the top down. And by saying that is you look at how major record labels are signing records now, and they're not signing records based on records. They're signing records on TikTok, on how what's popping off, which they genuinely have softwares that go, that will analyze what records are doing well on social media, and then they will go and sign that. And they're not growing artists. They're signing one hit wonders, and we're going back to that one hit wonder world where you'll have an artist that has a record that does really fucking well.
Yeah.
And then you hear nothing about that artist ever again.
Yeah.
And that's, for me, is the thing that is killing the music industry the most. Not just electronic music industry, like music industry generally, because you have it sets up artists to fail. You have these huge rappers that just do one record and they're gone. And how does that create community when it's just about one record? It doesn't. Like, gone are the days of Kendrick. Gone are the days of Jay-Z, Eminem, like Kanye. Like, it's not about, do people get excited by artists now, or is it more so about capturing that one moment in time that creates the hype, and then everyone just jumps on that one hype?
Yeah, I think for a lot of these labels now, it's just like the shortcut, you know, the fast track to those numbers. You know, it's not about,
I think that's like with everything.
Yeah, it is. It's the world we live in, you know, because of, you know, social media. It's not about developing an artist and nurturing that artist and, you know, the future of this artist, you know, thinking
for the future of, yeah.
Yeah.
The future of what we do. I'm like, I don't know what the scene's going to look like in 20 years.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Who knows?
Yeah.
It's scary to think about too. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, you know, you work so hard for this.
I just can't still wrap my head around these AI created artists. You know, and now how they're copying, you know, like, you know, I was listening to the Drake one the other day and I was just like, holy shit, it sounds fucking better than Drake.
Yeah.
It, like, I was just like, wow.
Yeah.
What does this mean? And then I was just like, speaking out in my head. I was like, would it, like, you know,
potential. Yeah, now, like, licensing and, yeah, it's going to be nuts.
But it's going to be real, you know, like.
Well, it's like Mel Gibson. Did you hear what Mel Gibson did?
No.
Because I think it's Mel Gibson. He's got a deteriorative brain issue at the moment. So he's like really not good he's really not healthy at all. And is losing his speech and everything like that. And he signed off all of his rights to all of his vocals, all of his pictures, all of his film and everything. So they can still make Mel Gibson movies.
Wow.
Yeah, which is really, like, it's pretty mad that they can do that. That's, but it's also pretty, it's weird. It's there's a level of it for me where I'm like, this is amazing. Like, the technology's there and Mel Gibson can live forever. But there's also a level of it where I'm like, we don't need you. We don't need something forever. Like,
yeah.
No, we don't.
A start and end and all the bits in the middle is the most beautiful part of a artistic journey in whatever that is.
Yeah.
Like,
I think it's really interesting with this whole copyright thing, you know, with AI and what's real and what's not and what's allowed. You know, I think it's like, you know, I was just reading an article and they said, it's like, we're back at the moment where Napster, you know, literally collapsed the music industry, you know, and, you know, not only the music industry now, the film industry, you know, and like, this is just like, it's across the board, you know, what this can affect, you know, as far as copyright, you know, because this AI version is literally fake, you know, so you really didn't take that person's vocal. This is completely created, you know, so do you really own it? You know, so it's like, am I allowed to just put this out? Even though it sounds like Drake, but it's really not him. I didn't even use anything from Drake, you know, like, it's
almost the same thing as like copying a bass line, right? Like, it's almost the same thing as that, where it's like you went note for note, but you changed one note, so I could probably use it.
Well, right. And also, it's like, did you see what happened to Ed Sheeran? Like, he was obviously tried to sue and he won the case, but he, in court, the way he won the jurors over is he played like 20 different versions. He played 20 different songs with exactly the same chord structure that he used. And he was like, guys, this is 20 examples of the same record, that the same chords, but I've just put different lyrics and a different melody on top. But there's 200 versions of different versions of this that have all been hit records. So it's like, we're all living in this.
Why are you coming for me?
Yeah. We're all living in this plagiarism world. And AI, I listened to a podcast the other day with this insanely intelligent dude that's far more intelligent than all of our brains put together. But he was talking about quantum computing. And he was saying about AI, and he said that the interesting thing about AI is just plagiarism. AI takes whatever they have on the internet, whatever's out there available, and creates a new product out of that. The thing is it can be done multiple times. So you could go and ask an AI machine to make a Drake record, and Anthony can go and ask an AI machine to make a Drake record, and it could come out exactly the same. Whereas Drake goes into a studio, you guys go into a studio, and you create something completely different. And that is the beautiful thing that I don't think we're ever going to get away from, is that as artists, as not even artists, like, you could ask a non-musician to go in and write something, and no one's going to be able to recreate exactly what that is. And I think that's the one thing that we all are really fortunate about, is that AI is not about emotion. AI is not about culture. It's not about tangible things that we as human beings are. And that's what people connect with. You're never, like, maybe, never say never, but I am never fucking going to an AI concert. I don't care what anyone says. That's not what I do concerts for. I'm not going I'm not going to go see the new Oasis album that AI wrote and watch some other bands perform it. I'm going to an Oasis concert to watch Oasis. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
So I think we're good, but I think on a financial side of things, AI can fuck us on a financial of making making money off music. But who fucking makes money off music? In our world.
Yeah, in our world, no, yeah. It's very hard, yeah.
Like, even if a record does really, really well, like, you can't live off that. Like,
no, the only shot you got is getting sync, like something like that, you know, if it's a hit. It's the only shot you have with, like, making real money.
Yeah, my biggest records, my biggest records, I cannot live off the income that they've generated.
No shot.
Not at all. So it's like, okay, well, we have to do shows.
Yeah, that's why we make music now.
Yeah. Which then brings back round to the label and bringing back culture and bringing back why we do what we do. And I want to go back to matter and the plans for it. Are you planning on signing another artist for the time being, or are you just releasing your own stuff?
No, we're going to definitely sign. We have a few things set up already with some newer artists. And, you know, we're going to take it slow, I think, as far as, like, you know, developing and like, really, like, reaching out to certain artists, I think. Mm. Like, we want to kind of build a little crew.
It's important.
But, you know, anytime, like, the label needs a fill-in or another release, I think we'll have no problem getting it done.
Sick. Are you going to be consistently releasing, or is it more of a when the right record comes along? How do you guys want to have that?
I think in the beginning, yeah, we want to try to keep a consistent schedule, a monthly release.
Yeah.
And hopefully, you know, we could manage that, you know, between our own and other artists that we have lined up for the label and some outreach that we're going to be doing, even some past matter artists that we worked with as well. We'll see how it goes. Yeah,
amazing. Can't wait.
I feel good now because, I mean, you know, we have a team behind it. When I first launched Matter, there was no team.
Yeah,
you know? It's just me. Yeah, and it's just impossible for me to manage on my own. So we have a good team now, me, Anthony, and a few other guys. And as Anthony mentioned, you know, there are some locals that, you know, we want to bring in and have them release and build as artists on the label as well.
Amazing. I can't wait to see it grow into amazing things. Are you planning on doing parties or not? Is that not something that's even in the scope right now?
Yeah, we have a couple lined up already. One in Stereo in Montreal.
Amazing.
And another one at Public Records in Brooklyn.
Sick.
I think we'll be selective on where, you know, we do things for sure.
Yeah. We don't want to come out of the gate and just do a Matter event everywhere. Absolutely not. I mean, you know, and where we do select to have those parties, it has to be the right venue.
Yeah. Right room, right vibe, right people. And that should set us up for some success. I don't want to do like just nonsense shows just to put the brand out there. I want them to be like super proper. Like people come to a Matter show to get a full experience rather than, you know, anything half-assed.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. Lads, let's wrap this up. I've really enjoyed this conversation.
Yeah, it's good.
Thanks to both of you for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Of course, bro. Thanks for having us.
I love the record as well. Go listen to it.
Oh, thank you.
Nice one, lads. Thank you so much. And that's a wrap. Big love to both of them for coming on. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. Please share it. Please subscribe. See you next time.
Pulling up to Mickey D's just for drinks? Oh, yeah, that's me. Nothing extra, just perfection and a straw. Coming in hot for the coldest cups on the block. Because there are drinks. Then there are drinks from McDonald's.
Mix things up with any size lemonade or sweet tea for $1.49. Perfect with our classic fries. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.